The pictures that came out from that were absolutely charismatic. You know, scenes of dust being kicked up by riders and puncture victims by the side of the road and service cars running all over it. And the race became an instant success.
Welcome to the British Continental Podcast, the show shining a light on stories about British bike racing teams and riders at the domestic level.
Hello, I'm Denny Gray, and welcome to episode 7 of our new podcast series. Today's episode features an in-depth interview with Colin Clues, someone who, in my view, should be regarded as a true legend of domestic road racing. Founder and director of Cycle Classic Promotions, a UCI commissaire, an anti-doping control officer, and a member of British Cycling's Road Commission, he's a man who lives and breathes cycling. And at 70 years old, his passion for the sport seems absolutely undiminished. He's probably best known as the organiser of the Rutland Melton International Cycle Classic. Taking place on roads and farm tracks across the undulating landscape of Rutland and East Leicestershire, it is one of the most spectator-friendly races on the British calendar. It's often compared to a Belgian classic, and it's easy to see why. Year after year, the race produces images of dust-covered pelotons, rowdy roadside barbecues, and riders scrambling for spare wheels after untimely punctures. But it has a homespun, unique charm all of its own, and Colin seemed too modest to admit it in the interview, but after 15 editions, the race has become a true British monument. Through his Cycle Classics promotions vehicle, Colin has now added a women's edition, as well as a junior men's version of the race, and last year he also ran the inaugural Bourne Cycle Classic. In this interview, Colin recalls the early beginnings of the race, and how he's transformed it into one of the most cherished races on the British calendar. He discusses the challenges of organising elite bike racing in the UK, and explores how we can improve the domestic scene. He also recounts some of his favourite editions, including some incredible tales from the infamous Rainsodden 2012 race won by Ian Wilkinson. Over to the interview. Welcome, Colin, to the British Continental. Thanks so much for joining us this evening. It's the end of June, the last day of June, and I guess we're hopefully in the end stages of lockdown. In theory, you've got a very busy set of jobs. You're a race founder and director of the Rutland Melton Cycle Classic. You're director of the Cycle Classics Promotions, a doping control officer, a UCI commissaire, a British Cycling commissaire, and you're on the British Cycling Road Commission. So have I got that just about right?
I think that's enough to be going on with, and certainly more than my wife would wish, perhaps at times.
And in this kind of strange time, does that keep you busy enough, or are you kind of, you know, looking for more things to do?
Well, I think I think for anyone in this stage that we're in at the moment with lockdown, and we're into about the third month of lockdown here in the village that I live in. Really, it's a very, you know, emotional time where nothing is happening, nothing can take actually effect, and very little progress can be made. You know, all the events that I expected to be participating in this year have all been cancelled currently, so you know, there is nothing to pick up on. It's really looking forward to 2021.
So I mean, I'd like to go back to the beginning, really. Well, at least the beginning in terms of race organization for you, Colin. I feel like, to me as a kind of fan, the Rutland Melton Cycle Classic, sorry for calling it a Cycle Classic.
Oh, well, earlier, whichever. It's spelling is a problem, but there again, it's a benefit as well, because everybody asks why it's spelt like that. So
yeah, maybe well, why is it spelt like that?
Well, actually, it is quite simply an abbreviation of my name. My first names are Colin Leslie, and obviously the first three letters from clues, you can form virtually the word sickle or cycle from that. So it first became came around when my children, for my 50th birthday, bought me a registration plate for the car, which was C11CLE. And really, that's where it all stemmed from. When I entered into promotional work in a bigger way, that was a natural sort of extension of it, and the name stuck.
Right. Okay. Interesting. And I was about to say that the race that you first founded and organised, the original Rutland Melton Cycle Classic, is, I guess, for me as a fan, kind of probably one of the most exciting, if not the most exciting, kind of one-day race in the UK now. You know, fantastic parkour, really exciting racing, something that I look forward to every year enormously. How did it all begin?
Well, quite simply, it began out of a personal change in my life to start with. I've been an international commissaire now for nearly 30 years, and I have, you know, whenever I've gone to races in Belgium, Netherlands, or wherever, I spend a lot of time with the organisation in and around the event, and it became a fascination to me as to why was it that people abroad could put on events which were so attractive and popular. And here in Britain, we seem to have the same stayed-old approach of things of, yeah, let's put on a race, but the club will do it, and we'll find a 10-mile circuit, and we'll send people around it 7, 8, 9 times, and that's it. And it's out in the sticks. Nobody, knows anything about it. So, you know, it fascinated me why we couldn't do something similar here, you know, and take racing to the public. Now, back in 2003, I had the sadness of losing my first wife through breast cancer. And I had a lot of time on my hands in that I took early retirement from a senior management post in the NHS. And I started riding my bike a lot more around the area that I live, and started to draw comparison with the lanes and the roads, the races like the Tour of Flanders and Paris-Roubaix are held on, thinking, well, you know, why couldn't we do something here? And the first feeling I had about it was, well, if I was going to do something, then I would want to take it to where people are. So I went to the two councils, the Oakham, the Rutland County Council in Oakham, and also the Melton District Council in Melton, Melton Mowbray, which are 10 miles apart, and said to both of them, I'm thinking about putting on a bike race, but I'm not prepared to actually put it out in the sticks. I want it to be something that everybody sees, everybody enjoys. And believe it or not, both councils said, that sounds great to us. We haven't got any money to give you, but we're willing to provide you material support to enable the start in one of the towns, which was chosen to be Oakham, and we'll put the finish in Melton Mowbray. So I said, okay, leave it with me. Let's see what we can do. So it's a story that I've told very many times. I put an article into the local newspaper saying that I have this in mind, and you know, they were very, very supportive of it. And from that, I had two phone calls. And the first phone call was a gentleman who said, well, I'm a keen cyclist. You know, if you have any problems in sorting out the police permission for what you want to do, then let me know. And when I said to him, well, who are you? It came about he was the station sergeant in Oakham, and he was a keen cyclist. The second person that rang me was a gentleman by the name of Dick Harvey, who owns a great deal of land, farming, community-style premises, etc., in the Euston area. And Dick came over and said, I'm a great fan of cycling. I'd love for you to bring the race through the village of Euston, and you know, I'll make it happen for you, you know, no problems. Now, having already looked at Euston and regarded that as one of the central points that I'd like to take the race through, I bit the hands off both people, and that's really where it all started. I didn't have any money, and in the first year that we put the race together, I think it cost me between £4,000 and £5,000. A substantial sum of that I put up myself. And the race, British Cycling at that time, accepted it in that very first year as a part of the Premier calendar for that year. But none of us knew how well the race would go. But the pictures that came out from that were absolutely charismatic. You know, scenes of dust being kicked up by riders and puncture victims by the side of the road and service cars running all over it. And the race became an instant success. And the event was then properly integrated into the National Premier Calendar Series. And really, we went from there. The second year, I managed to bring in a small amount of sponsorship, which softened the blow. But my aim all the way along was to actually have an event that, you know, was attractive to the public and to move it up to international status. And I set myself a goal of 5 years moving to international status. And really, after the second year, when we had a number of very capable riders along, one of which was Mark Cavendish, riding for the Isle of Man team. And it brought along Dave Brailsford, who was over the moon about the race and said, "This is too good for the Premier calendar. This needs to be an international race." So I said, "Well, if that's your view on it, you know, who am I to actually question that? That's where I want to go." And I decided that we would go for the third year to actually put the race on the international calendar. Now, without any support, without any funding, backing, etc., maybe a couple of £1,000 sponsorship only. And it wasn't until the January, before the first international race was to be held in the April, that the East Midlands Development Agency, the old EMDA, that the last Conservative government did away with, came on board and offered me nearly £20,000 to put the event, their name on the event. And really, that's how the event started. So we were really on a wing and a prayer for those first 3 years. Levels of support were fairly sort of minimal in personnel and other people. I relied on people coming along on the weekend. And a couple of people in particular I've mentioned, who were colleague commissaires, Kelvin Hoy and Tony Ferrari, they came along and they've been at every event since. And they absolutely love it. They are part of the team. We can't do without them. And they're there every year. But really, things started to grow from there. But for maybe the first 11 years or so of the event existing, I was still putting money into the event. And it wasn't until around about 2011 that we managed to bring in sufficient sponsorship to start and break even. And that's the position that we've held so far. And the event has become very, very popular, as you're aware, both with the fans and with the teams. And the situation that I'm looking at the moment is that for next year's race, I already have 9 teams who are asking to come from abroad to ride the event, from as far afield as the US. So, you know, it's all there to play for. It's just a case of continuing to have the sponsorship and put on the event in the way that people have become to love it.
Yeah, I mean, for those, I mean, hopefully anyone listening to this will know your race. But, I mean, now, for those that don't know it, I mean, you mentioned the kind of iconic imagery that you obviously got even from year one. How would you describe it?
Well, I think that, you know, the riders and most of the officials that we have from year to year put their finger on it and they say, "We don't know where the race goes and we've been on the race for 10 years. You know, and that is a simple fact, that there is only myself and a couple of others that fully understand where the race goes each time. The village of Euston, for instance, we go through Euston 7 times in the course of the event. Not once do we go through the village, which is only home to 79 people. We don't go through that village in the same direction more than twice. We use every road in that village, and you know, we can have upwards of 1,000 people in that village on race day. And you know, they they benefit from the barbecue that the villagers put on, and the village equally benefits in terms of the funds raised, which enables them to do all sorts of community projects. So it's a lovely win-win situation, and really, you know, which mimics very much what happens abroad. You know, and that's what I wanted to achieve. And this is really what I think bike racing should be all about. It isn't just a sporting exercise for us fans and passionate about the sport. It's taking cycle racing to people and putting something in front of them that is attractive to watch and, you know, really sets the heart pounding. And the riders will say themselves, you know, however badly you're feeling, to actually hit Euston and go through there with the crowd cheering and the smell of the barbecue, you know, is just out of this world.
Even on a cold April day.
A cold and wet April day, and we've had plenty of those, yeah.
The surfaces on the course, they're quite unique, really. I mean, I think people try to compare them to kind of races abroad, Trobriand on Paris-Roubaix, Tour of Flanders, Strade Bianche, but I guess they seem to me at least had to have a flavour of their own. How would you kind of view them?
I think so, and that I think any race that actually decides to use off-road sections, you know, gains a character of its own. And yes, I think the cycle or cycle classic, you know, does that. And I think that's what makes it unique and so attractive to teams coming from abroad, because it is something entirely different, something that, you know, most of them don't experience normally. And you know, you speak to the riders from the teams abroad, and however badly they've actually fared during the race, every one of them, without fail, will say, we want to come back next year. And that's the popularity of the event is something which, you know, is now becoming a little bit difficult for me, being able to accept the number of foreign teams within the budget that we have to achieve that.
Yeah, I mean, and you talk about the budget. I mean, because as a UCI 1.2 race, you have to pay for the accommodation, don't you, of the teams?
Yeah. The event, you know, whereas we started out in that first year of the event, as I say, costing maybe between £4,500-£5,000, our annual budget now is normally in the region of 60,000 to 70,000. And, you know, that is required to actually meet all the elements that we have to contribute towards.
Well, how much difference does the UCI status make in terms of how much you have to spend on the race?
With a direct comparison with such as the Women's Cycle Classic, you know, we can put that event on for around about £30,000, you know, and that is really as little as I would go to. You know, I don't think that I'd be prepared to run an event for less than that sort of money, because you know, it is just not practical, you know, and that is just covering costs. You know, I don't take anything out of the event, and you know, I still make small contributions to the event myself, you know, in different ways to ensure that the event looks like a bike race, you know, in bannering and this sort of thing. We're continually adding to our stocks of banners, both from sponsors and for the event itself, just to ensure that, you know, we make the race course that we have of nearly 200 kilometres now look like, you know, a cycle race course. It isn't just, you know, there's the race go and it's gone. You know, for days in advance, we've got banners there virtually on every major junction indicating that there's a race going to be taking place. And on race day, that's what helps bring the crowds out.
I mean, you mentioned the fact that I was going to come on to this later, but I might as well ask you now. But you know, you're obviously a UCI race. You have been for pretty much the whole time you've run. I guess my last question was, what's preventing other races stepping up to UCI? I mean, I know talking to Dan Elmore, he said it would cost about £10,000 extra to make his race, the Lincoln, a UCI race. Do you think it's purely a cost thing for races? Are there other kind of things stopping races stepping up?
I think there's a lot of fear that, you know, that that it won't go as well as perhaps they might wish. But, you know, I'm a fervent believer, you know, in working with organisational colleagues in this country to try and assist them in actually getting, you know, to international standard. And certainly, yeah, you know, the Lincoln Grand Prix, when Ian Emerson was running it many years ago, you know, it was international status, you know, and it operated very well at that status. And the event certainly is of a quality that is, you know, equally as good as the event that we run, you know, it, and it should be at that level. Equally, Brian Cookson I've spoken to, and I know that he was also very keen to have perhaps gone to international status, you know, by next year as well. But I think the issue that we now face, of course, is that where you have an event that is funded primarily from local authority resources, then it's an issue that is going to actually reflect badly on us for a few years to come.
Mm. Because local authorities' budgets have just disappeared during the crisis, is that what you...
Well, I think, you know, we have to wait and see just what effect this will have. But I myself, you know, I feel very pessimistic with regard to the way that those events that, you know, exist by virtue of funding from local authorities, you know, just how well that they are going to be able to continue in the future, you know... Even ourselves, you know, I think that the situation we have two major sponsors in Rutland Cycling, stroke Giant Rutland Water, and also Schwalbe Tyres. Both of those have indicated quite clearly that, you know, they are there and they will still be there when we come out of this pandemic situation. But, you know, my budget isn't reliant totally on those two. I have to have other smaller sponsors, smaller companies who are willing to put in smaller sums to actually make it up to the total figure that we require. And really, the situation with regard to those other commercial companies, you know, at the moment is totally unclear. Whereas I think with local authorities, I think it's, you know, becoming more and more clearer that they are being virtually wiped out, you know, by what's going on. And the government is not going to be in a position to be able to top up the funding, and just how much of a priority cycle racing will be for them in the next year or two, we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah. And it seems ironic at a time when the cycling industry itself seems to be booming. You know, bike sales have gone through the roof during lockdown, and the Prime Minister said he wants us to be I can't remember what he said, but anyway, he wants us to be kind of a, you know, leaders in cycling or something, some world beating probably, or one of his other favourite phases. But, you know, clearly there's a strong feeling amongst at least parts of the population that cycling is a transport mode that we want to use more and more of.
I think, you know, the situation as I see it is that, yes, there is a, you know, legitimate enthusiasm for cycling. And, you know, I think we all need to, and we all want to see more and more people on bikes. But I think that, you know, sums of money being given to councils are there to actually provide for the community as a whole in terms of facilities, cycleways and this sort of thing, as it has tended to be in the past. And I think that the icing on the cake is maybe putting on a bike race. And really, it's just, I hope I'm wrong, but I think that, you know, we have to be aware that, you know, there's a lot of authorities, local authorities, that will not have the funding to actually, you know, to you know, add that icing on the cake, which, you know, as in the case of our race, lasts for one or maybe 2 days a year, whereas, you know, funding given by the government should be shared out and able to be, you know, at the advantage of the community for the whole of that period. And that's what we're going to be facing, I think. But we'll see.
Yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of interested in the model that you chose for the Bourne Cycle Classic. Obviously, happened last year. Fortunately, didn't happen this year. But from what I understood, the concept was really the creation of a festival of cycling, and it wasn't just about the race or the races. It was also about really engaging the community around all aspects of cycling. And that seems like a potentially a really useful way of approaching racing. You know, it kind of crosses that divide between the need to encourage people to be interested and inspired through by cycling and also hold a race at the same time. Was that what you were intending to do? And do you think that's a model that, you know, whilst you weren't able to go ahead this year, can be followed in the by others and yourself in the future?
I would like to think it is, but again, I think we face the issue concerning the budgetary restrictions. When I was first approached by the South Kesteven District Council officers about putting a race on for them, similar to the Rutland Mountain, I jumped at the chance, and we gave them the opportunity of widening it out, as they did, to make it into a festival. And, as you say, it worked very, very well. It was highly successful. The problem that we faced with that, unfortunately, was that really those involved were very overly enthusiastic, and really the sums of money that were expended on achieving that success far outweighed the benefits that were seen to accrue from having the event staged. And I think the problem again is that the council there, I think, he's unlikely to be prepared to put the sums of money in to make it happen. So we would love to see it happen again, and I'm still enthusiastic to see that happen, but we're going to have to bring in substantial sums of commercial money to actually make it a proposition. And, which is sad, which is very, very sad, because the community, they did enjoy it, but and the wider concept that was built around it. But officers have changed there now. Council officials responsible for the leisure services, etc., they have changed as well. So it's a dramatic turnaround, and we're dealing with far different people. So we'll just have to wait and see on that one, what transpires.
How optimistic, if you had to give us a percentage chance of your hopes of it happening next year, what would you put it at the moment?
Well, it's the commercial sponsorship. I believe that we could still put on an event there of a national standard with around about a budget of £30,000, which was the original starting figure that I put to South Kesteven 2 years ago. That would be practical. That would give us a national level event. And it would operate well, but it would then be up to the council to fund the external elements to give it the feeling of a festival that we created and achieved last year. So it isn't dead in the water, but again, at this time, it's looking and finding a company that has that sort of money available to put into a sporting event that bears their name.
From what you're describing, putting on bike races is far from simple, and I guess particularly this time, very challenging. How much of your time is devoted in a typical year to kind of running, not just the Rutland Melton Cycle Classic, but obviously the women's race and the junior race that you hold and now Bourne, or at least Bourne last year? I mean, how much of your time is just devoted, and how many other people's time is devoted to running these races?
Well, I think that I have a very, very good team around me now. The likes of Tony Ferrari and Kelvin Hoy being the prime ones that I can rely on and around the time of the event, and others as well that have come on board in more recent years that work regularly on races like the Tour of Britain that come along and assist us, and there are too many to name, but there's a good group of people that I can draw on. But essentially, for most of the year, I am Cycle Classics, or Cycle Classics, if you want to call it, and my typical year would be that the The international race takes place in April. The women's and the junior event would be taking place in, you know, end of June, beginning of July, as it would have been this year. So, firstly, the registration for the international event has to happen within 2 weeks of the event actually taking place. So it has to be, with British Cycling, the application for the following year before the end of May each year. So the process starts at that time and then runs through a complete run-up to the women's and the junior event. We then get a nice little hiatus, perhaps, through of 3 or 4 months where not a great deal is happening apart from just general correspondence from teams and trying to seek sponsorship and that sort of thing. But then come October time, really, it is full on. And, you know, I'm obviously retired. I have been retired for 20 odd years now. But, you know, without the time to just give to the race as and when I need to, then it would just be impossible, because I probably put in 3 days a week from October right the way through until we finish the women's and junior event.
Right.
And I'm not alone. I know that there's other organisers up and down the country who equally are giving that sort of time and commitment to it. And, you know, that's what needs to happen. And it's keeping a constant eye on the publicity and ensuring that, you know, we are giving snippets of information to the fans and people. And particularly this year, when we've got such a great long gap and everybody is anxious to hear whatever news that they can, of giving snippets of information to keep the interest there and keep the inquiries rolling along.
What keeps you going? What keeps you spent putting in that amount of time every year?
I'm passionate about the sport. I've been passionate about the sport for the last 50 years. You know, my first wife used to say to me that cycling for you isn't a sport, it's a religion. And she's probably correct. Really, you know, once I started the Rutland Melton event, you know, back in 2005, I think none of us expected that it would be the runaway success that it has become. And therefore, you know, we would be in it for, you know, 2, maybe 3 years. And then, like so many other races, it would peter out. But here we are now 16 years on, and the event doesn't seem to want to give in. And whilst I have the motivation and the health to actually continue it, then I shall try and do so. But I have to say that, you know, one of the problems I think we face for a lot of races in this country is that, you know, I'm 70 this year. A lot of our other organisers are of a similar age. And when you consider that Mike Hodgson, that we lost just to COVID-19 just a month or two back, who runs the Reservoir, you know, he was in his 80s. Now, you know, there's got to be people coming forward to actually, you know, come in behind us and actually be ready to take events on, because without that, then events will die.
Mm. I mean, that's a big worry for me as well. And what needs to change? What kind of support do we need to provide and to make sure that, you know, there is a new generation of race organisers, and that, I guess, we don't, you know, hopefully some of the races we have today don't go the same way of some of the other classic races that have disappeared from British shores.
Well, this is my greatest sadness. You know, when I grew up in a sport where we started off the year with events like the Grand Prix of Essex, and then it was the Harplager Grand Prix, and then the Havant Grand Prix, and the Tour of the Peak, and the Tour of the Cotswolds. These were all classic races, you know, and one by one, each one of them disappeared because of organisers unable to find replacements for them as they grew older and or even passed away. And it's a great sadness, because really, effectively, those races were our monuments. And really, we don't have that many events now. You know, I don't consider, after 16 years, that the Rutland Melton is a monument. The Lincoln is, you know, and that's existed for over 50 years. And, you know, that is, I think, everyone feels, the best race in the country. And so it should be. But, you know, and we've got to keep events like that going. And luckily, when Ian Emerson stood aside, you know, Dan Elmore was around to take it on. But really, there are not that many others of us that have got people in the background ready and willing to take it on. Now, we have formed over the last 12 months a national organisers grouping now, which I'm very, very sort of enthusiastic about, you know, it coming alive and actually starting to be an organisation that does support other organisers that want to come into the fold. But I think, you know, people have got to have the time and the motivation and the willingness to take on events of this type, which, you know, are not that difficult when you've been doing it for 16, 17 years, you know, because it all falls into place. But nevertheless, there has got to be time given to enable these events to continue. And, you know, I just hope there are people in the sport that are willing to take these on, or else, you know, we are going to have more gaps, and even other events that were our household names, maybe even the Reservoir. You know, there was an indication that someone was willing to take that on. But more recently, I've been told that, you know, that was really just a little bit of a red herring, and that the likelihood of the Reservoir now taking place, well, you know, that's virtually our only multiple day race in this country, you know, that's available to national level riders outside of the Tour of Britain or the Tour of Yorkshire. So, you know, there are, you know, we're losing events that we can't afford to lose, even now.
Yeah. What, I mean, do you have any kind of magic bullets, any kind of solutions? How do we, I mean, I guess it's great to hear about the organising committee, and I think, you know, that hopefully will give you a voice as well with British Cycling that you wouldn't otherwise have as individuals. But what is there anything else that can be done to kind of fill this potential gap we'll be facing in the future?
Well, I think British Cycling have got to step up a little bit more to the plate on this. You know, to be honest, really, they have actually done very, very little to support the domestic scene. You know, and we all, you know, jump about and have enjoyment from the Olympic and the World Championship successes and the Tour de France successes and everything that, you know, British Cycling has brought about. But, you know, really the domestic scene has been left in a void, and it's been left in a void for so long. And really, it has even been milked to a degree by British Cycling and its sponsors. You know, the situation with HSBC that we've had, and Sky before it, that HSBC was presented with 50% branding rights of all the national series events, without any consultation with the organisation. And that immediately presented all sorts of problems to organisers, because HSBC had an edict that no organiser could have, alongside their 50% branding on the event, any financial institution, large or small. And that immediately took out of the equation various sponsors that a number of organisers in this country had. And it also minimised the ability of organisers to be able to sell their events to other prospective sponsors. Because, you know, if you're coming along and you're saying, well, we need 30,000 from you to actually put this event on, but when you come to this event, HSBC have got 50% of the branding rights, of which they are actually contributing maybe a couple of £1,000 into the costs of the event. Would you actually sponsor on that basis?
Well, that's a good question, isn't it? I don't have that kind of money, so I don't have to face that dilemma. No, but,
but you know, this is one of the areas where, you know, the National Organisers Group has said to British Cycling that whatever happens in any replacement for HSBC, then, you know, there cannot be the blanket sponsorship given over to HSBC, because that is to the detriment of the national series. If British Cycling wants a national series, then they've got to be prepared to start and support it more willingly to enable it to sustain. Because otherwise, you know, we will not have a national series in a few years.
What's the motivation? What's the interest? What's the kind of attraction of being a national series event for a race? I mean, obviously, I say that with knowing that one of your races, the women's race, is a national road series event, and the other two aren't.
Well, the junior is as well. The junior is as well.
Sorry,
yeah. Yeah. Really, the only motivation for anyone to put on a national series is the kudos that it perhaps gives when seeking sponsorship. If you go to a local council, and obviously British Cycling has got a very strong reputation and name within the country for what it's achieved. So to go to a sponsor of a local authority and tell them that, you know, it's going to be part of that national series for British Cycling, that can assist in that way. But really, the overall benefits to an organiser in putting his event into a national series is very, very minimal. Now, we do so with the women's event and the junior event, and which we're in a very unique position with the women's event, in that it is not sponsored by a commercial company. It is not sponsored by a local authority, but it's actually sponsored by a private individual who is so committed to women's racing that he's prepared to stump up each year for at least a modest number of years, £30,000 to run the event. Now, that, I think, is a fairly unique position for any organiser. And one of the things that we obviously offer to him is the fact that we will put it into the national series, because it gives a greater level of status to the event, although that seems as if it has its own status now anyway, with more than 120 competitors in a women's field, which is probably the maximum that anyone gets anywhere in the country at the moment.
Mm. Well, I mean, that's a magic story. Are we allowed to say his name on air, or is he?
The gentleman, his Twitter page actually makes it quite clear that he's the sponsor. Yeah, and it is a gentleman by the name of Peter Stanton, who is a long-time supporter of women's racing in this country. And some years ago, when we were seeking money to get the Rutland Melton televised one year on a funding page, Peter very kindly offered to put up a couple of £100 towards that, which we were able to then achieve in that year, but then let it slip to me that, you know, if I was interested in putting on a women's event on his behalf, he would be prepared to sponsor it. And now, you know, this would have been the fifth year of that event. And, he's happy at the moment to continue to support women's racing to that extent. So, yeah, I think, you know, he's one of the unsung heroes of our sport in this country. You know, I merely put the event on, but, you know, I couldn't do it without people like Peter Stanton. And I think, the very fact of his name being mentioned is all to the good, because, you know, he's a wonderful gentleman. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah, I've been speaking to him offline, and I hope to feature him on the British Continental at some point. Amazing. I mean, obviously you've put a lot of your own money into the race over the years as well. Is that something that a sacrifice that many race organisers will be doing up and down the country?
Yes.
I mean, as well as your own time, of course.
Mm-hmm. I think so. As I say, it's only for about the last 8 or 9 years that the Rutland Melton has actually broken even. Before that, you know, I was contributing towards it, and as I say, continue still with various things that I see, and just a case of, you know, that would be a nice addition to the event, and I simply do it. as long as it isn't too expensive. But yeah, I think that, you know, there is no organiser anywhere in the country that is not putting their hands into their pockets. And, this is something that needs to be, acknowledged, that, it isn't simple putting on races. And it's something that British Cycling really need to be looking at, whether they can actually underwrite events, new events, to actually get them underway. Because this is the only way, I think, that without people putting their hands very deeply into their pockets, that new events will be able to gain the status that they need to have a viable national series. And hopefully, a small one-day international series at 1.2 level, which is really something that the teams in this country are crying out for.
Yeah, and fans as well. I mean, it'd be that kind of really gets me, the thought of that gets me particularly excited as a primarily a fan of the sport, to see kind of our own domestic teams racing against international teams on home soil would be fantastic. And not the kind of level of the Tour de Yorkshire, but the level in between, like, would be fantastic. But you mentioned a few things already, but what else do you think needs to be done or could be done to help improve the road racing scene in the UK? I mean, is it all on British Cycling? Are there things that they should be doing? And are there other things that the wider community, could do? I mean, I think British Cycling, fairly or unfairly, get a lot of the fire when people complain about the scene. But is it all up to them? Are there others... are there other solutions out there?
Well, they are the governing body, so eventually the book stops with them. There's no two ways about that. But I think that, within local communities, it's actually bringing people together. And I think that is one of the things that I'm very, very, happy to believe that we've achieved here, with the Rutland Melton race, that, we brought together all sorts of diverse groups within the community and individual communities, and we're adding in new communities. In 2019, for the first time ever, we included within the course of the international race a visit up to my own village here. And, we suddenly had 300 or 400 people out within the village cheering the race on as it did 4 small criterium laps around the village. And everyone is wanting the race to come back, and the thing that got me after that was the number of times that I was approached by people within the village after the event saying, that is the first time that I have ever seen so many people out of the village all out together enjoying something, and the local pub put on a hog roast and various other things, and we're hoping to add in some Morris dancers and this sort of thing. And within the overall concept, we've got that in other villages. They're doing the same thing, as in Ouston, which is the basic, but the local Rotary Club are involved. The Leicestershire 4x4 group come out and do the marshalling for us. There's all sorts of different groupings that come together, and the police, the local police, they actually love the event. They feel that it's something completely different for them from the general run of the thing. And we've created this by bringing all these individual groups together. And I think that is the way that we have to work the sport in the future, that we as a sport, the organisers, the clubs have to work a lot closer together and be prepared to give something to others. Because it's something that always actually amazes me, time and time again, that, we have organisers like myself up and down the country who run events for 1-2 days a year. Now, only 30 metres from me in my back garden, I've got a double garage, which is absolutely full of organisational equipment and materials. Now, that's used around about 2, maybe 3 days a year if we have the 3 or 4 days a year if the Bourne event took place again. Now, that's replicated however many times around the country by other people with that equipment. Now, we're saying about making things easier for people to come in and organise events. We all have the facilities that can be used by others if we're willing to actually, enable those people to have access to it. And this is what we should be doing, is actually making things easier for people. Saying, if you're interested in running an event, then just tell us, we'll tell you what you need and we'll actually make it available to you. And there's no reason why that can't happen. And again, I think that Biddy Cycling, try and do that, but they're on a national level and it is a far more difficult prospect for them. So I think that, it's increasingly organisers, clubs, communities all need to work together to actually pursue bike racing, because everybody loves to see it on the television. But, to actually see it come through past your home is another proposition entirely and is far more exciting for everybody.
Yeah. You mentioned the fact that you've got this national organising committee going now, race organising committee. What in theory could prevent you from, creating your own breakout national road series? Why do you need British Cycling's backing and HSBC or whatever their future sponsor will be on the logo? Is that a possible way forward?
Well, it's the registration of the events to start with. I think anyone proposing to break away from British Cycling immediately, hits a number of hurdles. There's the registration, the insurance aspects. There are things that British Cycling do ease our job, in terms of insurance and the entry system, if you wish to use that, which is a requirement for a national event to use that. So there are things that British Cycling are doing there. So, there is no benefit from actually breaking away from British Cycling in terms of placing a national series. It could be done. There's nothing to stop anyone putting up a number of events and calling it a national series. But it isn't the British National Series, which obviously British Cycling owned the name to. But really, it's the, you get into all sorts of areas then of riders involved in illegal events and this sort of thing. So you cause problems for the riders. Nobody wants further problems to be added into the situation that we've got at the moment. What we need to be looking at is how we do things, in a much more combined way to make it easier for people to compete and for people to put on races.
Okay. We've probably talked enough. I could ask you loads of questions about this, Colin. There's been some really enjoyable racing moments in the Cycle Classic over the years. Can you kind of talk to me about some of perhaps your one or two of your favourite editions or favourite moments of racing?
Oh, right. Well, yeah, I think, favourite moments, it was great to see Wilco, manage to take his tally of the Cycle Classic to two races. He's still the only person that's actually, won two editions of the race in the 15 that were held. It was, a little bit disappointing, not to see Gab's Colour, make it a double in 2019. But there again, that's bike racing, to be pipped on the line, and it made a lovely story for everybody. As did Dan Fleeman's win, back in 2017. That's the stuff that real dreams are made of. He's a great character riding for a local team, and it was storybook stuff for weeks and weeks afterwards in the local papers here in Melton. Local boy makes good. He wasn't that local, but he was riding for a local team. But I think the one that obviously stands out, and in so many ways, it was an absolute nightmare. But, in other ways, it was, looking back on it, the greatest satisfaction. And that was 2012, when the heavens opened 24 hours before the event, and it didn't stop raining until 24 hours after the event, and the roads became flooded. As race director at the front of the race, I had to divert the race on five occasions. And being in radio contact with the police, it became a situation where the police were saying to me, "Where do you want to take the race, Colin? Because, you know, you can't go down where you want to go. You tell us where you want to take it to get it back to Melton for the finish, and we'll open the roads for you to enable it to happen." And that's what happened. But, you know, so many stories from that event, you know, are incredible. I mentioned Dick Harvey, you know, who has a very large farmhouse in the centre of Euston. And his abiding tale that he, you know, still tells after dinner was that after the event that year, he went back to his farmhouse to find the entire Belgian team in his kitchen wearing his dry clothes, and he didn't have anything dry to put on himself. You know, and it was the only way that his wife stopped them having hypothermia. You know, it was, you know, we had 22 finishers out of 168 starters, you know, and it was an absolute, you know, organisational nightmare and the race director's nightmare. But really, looking back on it, you know, we did, you know, with all the folks that we've got involved, we did a job that day which, you know, we can be proud of for the rest of our lives, because, you know, so many people would have said, you know, let's call it a day, it's not on. But with everybody concerned, the police and the marshals and everything, and we had marshals flitting around all over the place, you know, so as to get the event on. But we now have a very, very strong understanding that when we take the road closure orders out, we include within the road closure orders many, many roads outside the actual course. Because, you know, if we got another day like that, at least we could legally in future go down those roads, which in 2012 we did very illegally.
But with the police's consent.
With the police's consent, yes.
Yeah. Fantastic. I mean, as a fan, you always pray for a wet Paris-Roubaix. As an organiser, do you pray or hope that it's not wet?
Well, you know, we now spend so much time on dressing the course with banners and everything. You know, it is always a disappointment when we see those banners looking bedraggled on the day. So I like to think that, you know, it's always nice to have a dry start to the event, even if it then starts to get a little bit damper later. But, you know, a mixture of the two, sunshine and a little dampness in the air, but nothing too extreme to ensure that we keep the crowds out there and enjoying the day that we've put on for them, and that's what's most important to us.
Yeah, and I guess what's great about the race as well is that you never quite know whether it's going to be like a group finish, albeit a reduced bunch finish, or you know, a solo win, or you know, something in between. It's one of those unpredictable races where you never quite know what you're going to get, do you?
No, it's a very strange one. You know, most years it will break up into, you know, various pockets. You know, we can have up to 10, even 12 groups finishing it, you know, over a period of 15 minutes or something like that, you know, to get people there. But, you know, we have, like in 2019, where they obviously decided that, Wiggins were going to try and control the race for Gab's colour to take the sprint win. And so we had a breakaway of almost 170 kilometres involving three riders who just, you know, made hay while the sun shone and went away from the race, you know, with no placings, but with effectively nearly £900 shared between them on all the intermediate prizes. So it's like that Forrest Gump thing, isn't it? You know, you never know quite what you're going to get when you eat your chocolates.
And it's been, I guess it's helped, you know, it's helped riders on to greater things. I mean, you mentioned Gab's colleague, he won an edition, very unlucky not to win last year. And, you know, winning, having a race like that in his Palmares, I imagine, must have helped him in his quest to step up to the world tour. I mean, is that something you hope the race can achieve as well, you know, provide that kind of stepping stone for British riders and international riders, you know, to even bigger things?
Well, it's always gratifying when I go abroad and, you know, work on races that, you know, my colleagues, every one of my colleagues knows about the event. They've all heard about the event, you know, and I speak to team managers about the event. And the sadness very often is that, you know, very good quality teams will say to me, you know, that it's only the expense of coming over to Britain, which, you know, for a one day race, that really stops them actually, you know, coming along and as having some good quality pro-continental teams in the event, which, you know, the regulations allow if they were willing to come. But yeah, you know, we've had some very, very good riders over the years. You know, 2009, you may not be aware, but we had someone who went on to greatness in terms of Peter Sagan, you know.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, he rode the event. He rode the event and punctured. But you know, one of the first teams that ever came to the event was a team from Slovakia. He's a colleague of mine came along with a team called Dukla, Peter's very older brother was part of that team in the early days. And when he came along to the event in 2009, he was the world junior mountain bike champion. And he'd just got, I think it was second or third in the world junior cyclocross championships in the previous winter. But he rode the event, yeah. And in 2007, as I say, we had Mark Cavendish along, riding for a national team in the Isle of Man, having just won the week before the Shelter Peace. So, you know, we've had some very, very good names along, but, you know, and amongst our winners, you know, we pride ourselves with the people that we've had in terms of, you know, Malcolm Elliott, you know, the oldest winner of the race, but my God, you know, what a classy rider. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, one thing, I guess, as a fan who can not always make it to races is, on the one hand, I feel like not having TV coverage for your race creates a kind of mystique around it to some degree. And I guess the way that races, you know, back in the day had, where you would rely on newspaper reports and radio reports of races. But on the other hand, you know, TV coverage would bring something to the race that I get you'd see it in a completely different way, of course. And I guess would bring a whole new audience to the race. You tried to do, didn't you, a few years ago. Is that something you kind of regret not being able to kind of achieve? Would you still like to have TV coverage for the race one day?
The simple answer to that is yes. You know, but when we had the coverage a few years ago, it was at a cost of £15,000 to ourselves. And the coverage was absolutely excellent. And it went out on Channel 4, went out on Sky Sports, went on Eurosport, ESPN, Super Sports. And it was quite interesting that I used to go out to Hong Kong for some health service business. You know, even when I'd retired, I was involved in a project, went out there. And you know, I'd be walking through a shopping centre in Hong Kong and suddenly look up at a monitor that was actually showing some sporting event. And what was being shown was the Cycle Classic. We still get occasionally people, you know, from foreign countries, you know, sending an email through saying, we've just seen your event on television, you know. But the whole idea of doing that, you know, we felt that in investing 15,000, hopefully that would give us a much wider audience and enable us to bring in extra sponsorship. Whereas the net result was that it did not, in fact, bring in one penny of extra sponsorship to the event. And really, it was a one-off. It was a crowdfunding exercise that we did to assist in achieving that 15,000. We don't any longer have that sort of money surplus existing to put it on ourselves. But we are working with various groupings in this country at the moment to look at live streaming for the event of possible future editions. So I think that may well be the way to go in the future, and it be a much lesser cost to ourselves and still achieve another element to the race that has not been possible previously.
Great. Well, I'll keep my fingers crossed that can happen. It'd be great for many of us to be able to watch the race if they can't be there in person. I think we'll probably have to wrap it up there, Colin. I could chat to you all evening, but the night's drawing in. I really, really appreciate your time this evening, Colin. It's been absolutely fascinating to talk to you. Hopefully we can stay in touch with you and continue to feature you on the website and the podcast. But best of luck for 2021.
Thank you.
I know you're pessimistic about the future, but by the sounds of it, you've already got a huge amount of interest for the international event, and the women's and junior events are still planning to go ahead. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. We have the program of the three events, which are fairly set, and you know, without any external problems that we've faced this year, then we are ready and waiting to go, and we can pull the whole thing off the shelf at any stage to make it happen, but we just need a clear run at it.
Thanks so much, Colin. Much appreciated.
You're very welcome, Danny.
Thank you very much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, then please do leave us a nice review. You can subscribe on all the usual channels, and you can follow us on social media. On Twitter, we are at British Conti, and on Instagram, we are at the British Continental. And please do visit our website for more interviews, journals, previews, and news at thebritishcontinental.co.uk.